one in the can.
Let's do this. Let's do this. Okay, folks, just in case you thought that we had gone away, no, we haven't. We're back again, Anne-Marie and Lou for Political QRM. Welcome. And here we are again.
Yes, we lulled them into a false sense of complacency.
Yeah, yeah, thinking that
thinking we were gone, yes.
Yeah. No, but we're back.
We're back, yes. Insert Poltergeist little voice over here.
Yeah.
It's been an exciting time since we last were together on the air, anyway.
Yep.
Happy Easter, by the way, to all the people out there that might be listening. We hope you have a blessed and joyful Easter.
And also Passover.
And Pesach, Aziz and Pesach for all of our friends of the Jewish faith. Won't get into the different sectarian Yiddish Hebrew thing. But anyway, have a nice holiday, no matter what.
That's true.
And I think who better to talk about on Easter than Anne-Marie? You said something about His Holiness.
Yes, the Pope Benedict the 16th, said a few things at the Basilica Vigil, which really got me. And what he said was, and I have to read from here, he says, life is stronger than death, good is stronger than evil, love is stronger than hate, truth is stronger than lies. Okay, now, listen to this. He says, the darkness enshrouding God and obscuring values is the real threat to our existence and to the world in general. I mean, that to me is very fitting for what's going on in the world today.
Give me a little bite.
Well, just the fact that you have what is going on here in this country with the government, I really think, attacking the Catholic Church, I really think that was a pointed finger at the Obama administration and what they were trying to do to Catholic Church and religion in general. I mean, that's darkness to me. And things...
I want to agree because I think I see a lot of people on a lot of different boards on the internet, and... you know how we've been covering for some time the Republican campaign trail, and people are up in arms about whether it's Rick Santorum, whether it's Mitt Romney, because of Mitt Romney's faith, because of Rick Santorum's faith, and I think the fact that they are men of faith scares people.
Yes, yes, and you know something, these two men don't want you to convert to their faith. They don't.
Well. The thing is, other people believe that, well, they'll get in office and they'll outlaw our faith. First and foremost, I mean, anybody listening to this, you know, obviously has a higher than room temperature IQ. Mm-hmm. They know that there is no such thing as a president walking in and by fiat deciding, well, since I'm Catholic, everybody in the nation will be Catholic. I mean, they tried that in England and they got...
They didn't go too far with that, yeah.
You know, that's kind of silly. But the idea is that they're, they just want this to be the Christian nation. Well, you know, I'm sorry, Thomas Jefferson created his own Bible and took out all references to...
Lou, back off a bit. Back off from the microphone a bit.
Okay. Took out all references to Jesus' miracles and to his resurrection because he was a member of the time of enlightenment and he believed in the fact that if it couldn't be proven scientifically, it didn't exist. I don't believe that way. I believe God can do whatever he wants within the confines of ours and add some spice to it.
Yep.
And I think Benedict has hit this on the head.
Mm-hmm.
I think he has lit a candle and he did not put it on.
That's right. Yeah.
And I think of faith, any faith.
Mm-hmm. Any faith. No, seriously.
Any faith. And I don't care if it's one of the Abrahamic faiths, you know, Christianity, Judaism, Islam. I don't care if it's the Buddhists. Right. I don't care if it's Shinto. Yep. I don't know, any of them.
Mm-hmm.
The golden rule and the Ten Commandments and things like that, I don't care who you are. They're all good ideas.
Yes, yeah.
There's nothing wrong with what's taught in those ideas. Even atheists have to turn around and say, well, you know, they are good suggestions.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's a template for just basic living.
So whether it was a direct strike necessarily at President Obama, or I think that Obama and his and company, I think, are not necessarily the threat. I think they're a symptom, is what I was going for. I believe they're a symptom. The attack on the Catholic Church directly and on religion in general, I think they are a poster child for. I think they're a symptom of a disease more so than the disease itself.
Okay, yeah, yeah. And the disease is what? To get rid of a religion, right?
I think to get rid of religion, to enable the wrong half of all the equations that His Holiness put forward, to the hate instead of the love,
yes,
the war instead of the peace, the dark instead of the light. You know, I think that's a big part of it. Mm-hmm. I do. I really do. And the problem is, I don't know why. You have any ideas on that?
I'll tell you the truth. Well, look, when you start looking at things like the Obama administration and different governments, they all want a global government. And one of the basic tenets and beliefs of a global government, boy, where's my brain today, is basically to take out religion. You know? Your faith and your... What?
How many Catholics are there?
Oh, God. I don't know, 700 million?
No, I think it's closer to 2 billion.
You think so? Okay, all right.
You want to talk about a global government, just go back to the real Renaissance. Go back to the real Enlightenment. Go back. The Catholic Church was as close to a global government as you'd ever seen.
That's true, but you know what? Okay, but back then, Judaism existed. I mean, it did. So did Islam. But what they're trying to do now is take religion out completely. I mean, and that's part of the socialist globalist initiative. That's what they want.
Just, yes, you just qualified it. The socialist.
Oh, yes. Okay, I'm sorry. Globalist. Yeah. Yes.
Now you're in there. Socialist agenda.
Yeah.
You know, the people's movement.
Yes.
This is where the religion hate comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sure. Gee, how did I not see that?
Oh, come on.
Because, you know what, listen, you know, people talk about, you know, what he was after with the Catholic Church, and I touched something on in one of my articles recently. It wasn't that long ago that someone like Tim Tebow would have never had the problems and travails that he's had lately.
Mm-hmm.
For years, whether it was in football, whether it was in NASCAR racing, you walk up and stick the microphone in the face of the winner of the Daytona 500, and first thing out of his mouth, I'd like to thank my Lord Jesus Christ and the whatever race team and Fritos and Doritos and every, you know. But he starts out thanking his God.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever complained.
I know.
Tim Tebow is not the first person to pray on the football field.
No, he's not. Nope. No,
you know, he may be the last, but he's not the first. And this was never an issue. You know, we had years ago, whether it was high school football, college football, NCAA stuff, the pros, you always had a guy go down on a knee when he got to the end zone.
Yep.
You know, on one team or another. Nobody ever said anything about it until now.
Yeah.
Because the communist, socialist, global agenda, as opposed to just a bunch of
Looney Tunes.
Complaining Looney Tunes. And the assault on all things religious.
Mm-hmm.
I think we started to hit on this before. It's a card game.
Yep.
The religion card is a card to played in all the arguments for the socialist globalist agenda.
Yep.
anything that you can think of that will bring a welt onto someone's skin is a card that they can play, whether it's religion, whether it's race, whether it's gender, whether it's orientation. It's all a card game, and it's all visceral. It's designed to make you either love or hate. It's designed to make you care or not care. It's designed to make you curse or cure. You know, these are the ways games are played. And I'm sorry, what's the matter with just letting everybody get along about their day?
Oh, no, they can't do that. No, but that's not
the... Well, why can't they do that? Well, we can.
Well, we want to, but they won't allow us. They don't want to allow us to do that because they have something bigger and better for us, at least in their mind. They think that if we have faith, if we ascribe to a faith and its basic tenets and beliefs, many of them think that is, who said religion is the opiate of the masses? I can't remember.
Karl Marx.
Was it Karl Marx? Okay. I always thought it was, what's his name? I can't remember.
Trotsky.
No, not Trotsky. I can't remember. Okay, well, if it was Marx, see, that's how off my brain is. But, to them, that's something that is, that gets in the way. That gets in the way of the agenda. That gets in the way of everybody having an equal slice of the pie, of being treated equally. Religion gets in the way because they think that to be a religious person is not to be a well-learned person. They think you're dumb if you're religious.
Let me put this slant on it.
Go ahead.
What happens with religion is your eyes are on somebody but them.
That's the thing. Yeah.
You're not looking at the state, you're looking at your God.
That's right.
You're not looking at the state, you're looking at your life, you're looking at your wife and husband, you're looking at your children, but you're not looking at comrade whoever that knows what's best for you.
Yep.
By the way, I just clicked it, and yes, it's March.
Okay, good. All right.
I stand corrected. It says here that it's his most most frequently misquoted, and it gives the whole thing in the drift. Mm-hmm. This opium you feed your people is what he actually said. Anyway, actually, it's also removed once besides Karl Marx from Marquis de Sade.
Mm-hmm.
I think it takes your eye off the comrade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if Mao, with all those pictures in Peking, you know, if all those pictures were on the side of churches, then people would have to look at his picture on their way into a church, temple, you know, shrine, whatever it is, you know. They'd look at it and nod at it and, there's Comrade Mao, and then go inside to a church. That takes away their effect.
Mm-hmm.
It takes away the impact. The impact is, Big Brother will take care of you.
Yep.
Cradle to grave.
Yep.
And you said that the Holy Father said that love is stronger than hate.
Mm-hmm.
And peace is stronger than war. Well, what did Big Brother say? Big Brother said, hate is love.
Yep.
Peace is war. Good is bad. Newspeak.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I think that's a big piece of it.
Yes,
right
it is.
There.
Yep. Yep. He's trying to show a contrast. And
good for him.
Yes.
That's his job.
No, that is his job. That is his job.
He was hired on. Yep.
And do you know what? They actually had Timothy Cardinal Dolan today on one of the talk shows this morning.
Not 60 Minutes, because poor Mike Wallace.
Yes, poor Mike Wallace.
90 years old. God bless him.
God bless him. Yes.
They say you never know what a bad day is until you get to your office and find Mike Wallace sitting there.
Yes, exactly. God love him. May he rest in peace.
God bless him. Yes, indeed. He was an excellent journalist.
Yes, he was.
He will be missed. Yes.
Yes, he will be missed.
But anyway, I'm sorry I pulled you off your subject.
I've forgotten that. That was good. I really like that. I mean, you saw Mike Wallace say, God, all bets are off. Hi, I'm Mike Wallace, and I'm from 60 Minutes. It's like, God.
Wait a second. Give me a second. Let me hand my secretary all these documents to shred.
And it's amazing because the people would stand there with these plastered smiles on their faces, you know. He's like, but everything in their body says flee, you know. Their whole body language said, I gotta flee.
Flight reaction kicking in real hard, you know. Pedal down. The only thing that bothers me about poor Mike Wallace being gone, well, I shouldn't say that. He was a wonderful guy, but from what I've seen him as a journalist, the only thing that bothers me about Mike Wallace is he was 93 years old and he just passed on. He did not have the opportunity to sometime this week walk into the White House and start asking questions.
Yeah, I know. I know.
You know, let them have a bad day. Have Mike Wallace in there in the Oval Office. Yeah. Have Mike Wallace in the big office at the corner of the Department of Justice. Have him, you know, in all those places. But nobody's going to do that now. It's all softball journalism.
Of course it is.
Both of us. How's that? Not only myself, both of us.
Hey, what the heck? On one of the talk show hosts, somebody said, well, you know, do you think the church should be involved in politics? And he said, basically, excuse me, but, you know, this was brought to the church. I didn't enter politics, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, you know, we're going to fight against it.
Laid at our doorstep, yes.
We did not ask for this fight, but we will not run from it. That's one of his quotes. So
it's, for him.
You know, it's just so, you know, personally, I think anybody who even says, you know, I was raised a Catholic, but I really don't follow it, you better not vote against. So you better not vote against the Catholic Church. And 'cause that's what it's coming down to for, I think, Catholics.
Yes, I do believe so, but I believe it's coming down to that, you know, oh, I'm not a Catholic anymore, there are no former Catholics, just lapsed Catholics. So, you know, I'm a lapsed, Lutheran, I'm a, you know what, I was brought up Methodist, but I haven't gone to church, you know, all of these things. Any person who ascribed to some extent in their life to a codified faith, has to view this as a direct. It's not just against the Catholic Church.
No.
Catholic Church is not the only faith path on the planet that doesn't believe, you know, in these things.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
No, this is anyone who and the whole thing, you know. Oh well, you know. Well, what about women's rights? Well, what about them? What about them?
Yeah.
They have a right to have children. They have a right to not have children. They have a right to do anything they want. But why the hell do I got to pay for it?
That's true. Yes.
So, you know, you want to talk about women's rights, then you have to. You want to talk about religious freedom, you have to vote against Obama. I don't care who you do vote for.
Yep.
But you're in favor of religious freedom. You can't look at the attack on the Catholic Church, or church in general, religions in general, and vote pro-Obama. You can't be in favor of anyone's rights, race, religion, gender, or otherwise, and vote for President Obama because he is the single biggest threat to individual liberty this nation has seen in 200 years.
Yep. You brought up the topic of women's rights, and I was listening to Rush Limbaugh the other day, and he said, you know, he said the Democrats are, I'm paraphrasing here, but he said, you know, Democrats are trying to bring this up about the birth control and everything and how they say that the GOP wants to take away women's rights on this. And he said, you know, you want to talk about women's rights? You want to talk about how things are made bad for women? What about all the women that are out of work right now? What about all the women that can't provide for their families right now? And what does that have to do with birth control? And he's right. I mean, you know,
right.
We should be concentrating more. And he said, what gets me, he says, the GOP won't even touch this. They have a great opportunity here, and they're not even touching it.
There was an article in The Blaze by Tiffany Gabay wrote this article asking, was it a good campaign move?
Okay.
The president walked into a women's forum, and his opening remark was, I wasn't going to come over here until you women settled down. Well, now, just how paternalistic and condescending do you have to get before people turn around and say, hey, you know what? This guy's a jerk.
Yep. Until you women settle down. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I remember there was a whole...
Has anybody ever walked into a sports bar where it's just men? You know? I mean, come on.
Well, but here's the gig. And I know this is a little bit, you know, I do get tangential, but I find this pertinent here. Okay. There was a thing on Antiques Roadshow several years ago, the British version, not ours here.
Okay.
The British version, where, and I don't remember, that this is a while back. This fellow was appraising a piece of art, and he's one of their esteemed, you know, art guys, right? And he said something about the Yorkshire, please, no letters, I don't remember where in Britain it was, but it was on the order of the Yorkshire ankle.
The hell is that?
And it, so it proved that it was from this artist, because he always used to paint the Yorkshire ankle. And the idea was, it was what we would refer to in this country as a cankle, which I don't know what that is, but it's a very large ankle.
What it is, it's a combination of calf and ankle.
Okay.
The calf kind of goes straight down. That's what that describes,
okay,
instead of
so
different
anyway,
ankle.
Yes, this artist always paints that way. And again, people of Yorkshire, no letters, I don't mean to, you know. But so he got into this thing where the Yorkshire, or wherever, Women's League summoned him. He apologized so profusely. He said, I will come and do a free lecture on art, you know, for the Yorkshire Women's League, and apologize to them. And they televised it. This guy went, and these women were all in dresses, and they all had, you know, showing off their ankles, and, you know, and they made all these women walk past the curtain, and he looked to see which ones had it. And all.
Are you kidding me?
No, where but the Brits are you going to find stuff like this, right? So, but the thing I'm saying is, he made a statement like that, and the women called him to task.
Yeah, exactly.
All right? Now, he walks into a woman's forum. Oh, I wasn't going to come over here till you women settled down. You paternalistic slob.
Yeah, exactly.
You insensitive lout.
Yeah.
You know, but no, that's not. They all went, oh, they all laughed, and they were all excited. But yet they'll turn around and say, oh, the Republican war on women. The GOP's war on women. The conservatives' war on women. Look at Maxine Waters. Well, okay. Talking about
the alleged. We understand. She said, we understand who the enemy is. What are you talking about? Show me.
You know, she called John Boehner a demon.
I know. Eric Cantor, too. It's like, you know, show me where the GOP has a war on women. I mean, come on. Maxine, enlighten us.
Look, the GOP, I know people are going to give us letters on this. The GOP has done nothing but empower people since there was a GOP.
I know.
The GOP was behind the freeing of the slaves. Second of all, the emancipation. Second of all, they were behind all of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. Thirdly, they were behind the creation of the Equal Employment Opportunities Commission, which banned and outlawed prejudice against hiring someone for race, religion, creed, gender, national origin, sexual persuasion. There's section 1, 2, 3, 5, 9, 11, 13. All these sections on how you cannot be discriminated against in employment. And it's a GOP system. The Democrats voted against the abolition of slavery. The Democrats voted against the 1964 Civil Rights Act. And the Democrats have been against, well, the Democrats have been against the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, because that's the job of the union.
Yep.
After all, don't you know?
Yep.
And the union, of course, gives them money.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
So, you know, so it's no wonder that every time you turn around, they're saying, oh, we've got a war on women. We're anti-African American. We're anti-Catholic. We're anti. If anybody's pro everybody, it's us.
I know. Well, you mentioned earlier off air that you were talking about the Democrats. They basically have this deck of cards, and every time they need a new topic, they just pull out a card and they play the race card, the women card, that's all they do. And you know, if that one doesn't work, then they pull out another one.
Bill Donahue, when he was when the issue with contraception came up, and Bill Donahue, and it escapes me which program he was on, but he probably said it on
Fox
of them
or,
at one
point. Yeah, yeah.
But I'm saying on all of them at one point or another during that week, because they all went to, he's the go-to guy for this stuff for the Catholic Church.
Yep.
And he said, the banner has been raised, and Catholics need to follow it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what did they do? They whipped out the gender card.
Yep.
This is the GOP war on women.
Yep. Because it wasn't working the other way.
Right.
Just on the birth control. Yeah.
The whole thing with the Trayvon Martin, and only because that's the case that's in front of the public eye right now. Case after case after case, go back to O.J. Simpson, go back to all these other things, Angela Davis, go back to, if you really want to get nutso with it, go back to, what's her name that Al Sharpton made?
Tawana Brawley.
Tawana Brawley,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course, whip that race card out, baby.
Yep.
Whip that race card, and I'm sorry, I thought, first of all, because I've never been in my life, I've never been in a position as a police officer, as a soldier, as a platoon sergeant in the United States Army, in all of these capacities that I have served my nation, my community, in all the capacities I've served as a supervisor in an industrial facility, all these, I have never in my life had anybody play any card against me.
Mm-hmm.
I have never had a problem with anyone of any gender, of any color, of any sexual orientation, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But all of us, oh my goodness, well, it's right. When the president was elected, I thought to myself, well, gee, you know, here's a guy who has said, I no longer identify with the race of my mother. I am African American. I am black. And then he turns around. I said, okay, well, if that's the way you feel about it, but now you're the president of the United States of America. You're the single, ostensibly the single most powerful man on the face of the earth as we know it. So I guess the whole race card issue is off, right? The race card's got to be dead, right? Take all your race cards out of your wallets and throw them away. But the president of the United States of America is black. Mm. So there's no such thing as a, but oh, no.
No, it's used even more now.
And they say, oh well, you know, you're against us giving birth control to women, so you're anti women. They played the women card.
Yeah.
You're against somebody said recently online, and I saw it online, and I laughed hysterically when they said that the individual mandate will be struck down by the Supreme Court, which proves that the Constitution is racist.
Why? Because he's a black president?
If we strike down his?
Yeah.
Obamacare.
Yeah.
You know, if we strike down the individual mandate, which would, of course, mean that the birth control issue goes bye-bye with it.
Yeah.
Well, then the Constitution is a racist and gender-oriented document.
Oh, give me a break. I mean, they're really pushing it here. They really are.
How do you want your Constitution? Shredded, torn, just blacked out, highlighted, burned. What do you want us to do with it?
Oh, no, they think it's a living, breathing document that should change with the times. What?
It does.
That's called
amendments are for.
Well, yeah, but the thing is that they think, oh, well, you know what? We have to make it less, in their minds, less racial. What do you mean racial? It's not a racist document. What's wrong with you?
There's nothing racial about it. It doesn't say anything in the Constitution about, oh, by the way, only white people.
I know.
I mean, people say, well, it says, you know, all men. Well, that's not because it's gender oriented. That's because it was easier to write. They only had just so much parchment. But no, I was being a little silly there. But I mean, it was presumed that it was men and women. It was presumed that it was white men and black. It was presumed that it was Christian and Jew. There was no presumption of the fact that it was just white men, you know, landowners over 35. Baloney.
Yeah.
Baloney. You know, but then you get all these people, they get on the bandwagon, and it's like, and they, you know, I almost liken it to, have you ever been to New Orleans for Mardi Gras?
No. And I don't think I ever will.
Oh, that's a shame.
Why?
Oh, no, it's wonderful.
Yeah, I don't think I have my own boobs to look at, honey. I don't want to look at other women's boobs.
No. It has nothing to do with... No, come on.
I'll call the naked people down there. Okay, no.
And believe it or not, it really isn't...
Really,
you can go through an entire, you know, 3 or 4 days of Mardi Gras and never see, you know,
a set of
any
boobs.
Of that.
Okay.
You know, I mean, you want to go to Rio for Carnival. You want to go to, you know, you're going to see all kinds of stuff. Yeah. But I went to Mardi Gras. And now I say how wonderful it is. And I really should substantiate that by saying I did go once. Mm-hmm. And I have no intention of ever going again. I'm not a crowd guy. Anyway, you've seen them, I'm sure, then on Discovery or something. You know, the floats go down the middle of the road and down Duquesne Street or down, Bay Avenue, all those places. And they throw the beads.
Yes.
And they throw the coins.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody has to catch the beads and the coins and all this other stuff. You know something? I think the Democrat Party thinks this is Mardi Gras, and they're on a float. And they run down the road on this float, and they throw race and gender and religion coins and beads to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And expect them to pick them up and run with them.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Bob Beckel said there are 22 to 24% of us in this country who identify ourselves as progressive or liberal. That's only a quarter of the people.
That's true. Yeah, and why are we letting them... have the most influence in this country, because that's what's happening right now, you know, and people have to come back and say, that's it, no more, go back to your little holes and let us live our lives the way we want without you telling us that, without you telling us, oh gee, we can't have our religion or our, I mean, even something as mundane as a Big Mac, you know what I mean?
Or even something as mundane as a job.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be nice. Yeah. For a lot of people.
But, you know, as you said, or something as mundane, you know, because now, you're right, a Big Mac.
Yeah, they're trying to get into everything.
In New York City, they had to change the fry oil.
Yeah.
And they had to change the way they make, you know, you eat a Big Mac in New York City, it tastes different than one 5 minutes away across the bridge into New Jersey.
Ooh, you know, I just got an idea on that.
Go ahead.
Do you know the black market we could... Big Macs from New Jersey. Hey guys,
because you know, only because you know what? If it was, well, first it would not have happened under Rudy, but since Mike Bloomie is there,
God.
You know what? You wouldn't even. I mean, if it happened under Rudy Giuliani, you know, you'd get busted, you'd get a fine, you might even get, you know, depending on the volume numbers of...
It would have never happened under Rudy, for crying out loud.
But the idea is under Bloomie, you face a firing squad.
Probably.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's endangering the public. That's a terrorist act by bringing big masks into New York City.
Yeah.
The numbers on how many people are actually, and I mean literally the numbers of people, not the numbers of cigarettes, but the numbers of people actually smuggling cigarettes into New York City, because it's what is it? I my brother told me it's like $9.50
a pack
or something. Yeah,
almost $10 a pack.
You know, I don't smoke anymore. It's obvious. Yeah, you know, I don't smoke anymore, except my Tuscan cigars.
Oh well, come on, that's tradition.
Yes, that's more tradition than anything else. Absolutely, because I go through 3 or 4 boxes a year.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they're, you know, that's 15 to 20 cigars. So. The thing is, all these people that are, when I started smoking, a carton of cigarettes was $1.25.
Yeah, you believe that?
Mm. A carton. When cigarettes went to 50 cents a pack, my dad said, I'll be damned if I'll pay 50 cents a pack, I'll quit first. They went to 50 cents a pack, you know, son of a gun, he quit.
Son of a gun.
50 cents a pack.
Mm-hmm.
That's $5 a carton.
Yeah.
$10 a pack now. What on earth? This country is in bad shape financially, and people are, you know, unfortunately still smoking.
Yeah.
And what does it do? It's prohibition all over again.
It is. It really is. It is.
Well, alcohol's bad for you. Well, tobacco's bad for you. So we're going to tax it. Well, Big Macs are bad for you. Well, French fries are bad. Yeah, they are.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you shouldn't have. Well, you're right, I shouldn't, but you know what? I want to. Well, no, we're not going to let you want to anymore because we know what's best for you. Who are you?
Yeah, I know. And you know something? There is no hard evidence that proves that these people who stay away from all this stuff and are total vegetarians and that don't, you know, there is no proof that they live any longer than anybody else.
Oh, I forget the fella's name. What was his name?
Who?
The guy who created jogging.
Oh, yeah. You mean the guy that died when he was like 40?
The guy who created jogging, you know, because there was no such word as jogging until sometime in the 70s. Then all of a sudden it became the rage because this one guy was out there like the Jack LaLanne of jogging.
Yes, yes. I can't remember his name.
And he went and he was jogging and he was in New York City and he went out there 5:30 in the morning to go jogging. He got hit by a bus.
Oh, is that what it was? I thought it was a heart attack.
So... Look, folks, something, you know, the trick with life is nobody gets out of it alive.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, what about the guy? Was it Yul Gibbons or something? The guy that used to eat twigs and stuff?
Yeah. I've actually got his book.
Didn't he die fairly young, too?
No. He was an old man when he published the book.
Was he?
Yeah, when he used to advertise grape nuts.
Yeah.
Back in the 60s, he had gray hair and junk.
Oh, okay.
But there are other people. Jack LaLanne, unfortunately, just passed this past year, and he was in his late 90s.
Yeah, yeah.
But he was a fitness nut. But if you're a fitness nut, you know, there's other things involved. Like the one commercial for one of the medications says it's you know, you also
wait a minute, wait a minute. Yul Gibbons died when he was 64.
Oh, that's all it was?
That's it, sweetie.
That's it. I could have swore he was a cool. It must have been the day after he made the hickory nuts.
That's what I'm thinking, because he died when he was 64.
I actually have his book.
Your parents are older than that, right, dear?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
And they did it on a diet of meatballs and prosciutto.
Meatballs, prosciutto, prosciutto.
Prosciutto, yeah.
You know, I mean, you're talking about raw, fatty pork.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Prosciutto di Parma.
Uh-huh.
Now, granted, it goes through processes.
Right, yeah, but still, yeah.
And the Sicari Toscani.
Yep.
You know, unfortunately, I said I go through 4 or 5 boxes of whatever it is, you know, 20 cigars a year. But my grandfather used to go through a box of the 5 of those a day.
Mm-hmm.
He lived 104.
Are you kidding? Oh, my God.
No, I am not kidding. My grandfather, Nonno Francesco,
mm-hmm.
lived to 104, we think. Because you got to remember, way back
he
when,
lied.
I look on by,
you know,
it was all birth records were all in the church, and nobody knew if the priest put it down right, and who could read that writing anyway. But we have him pegged at 104. Mm-hmm. My dad's heart on, I think, pushing 90 is the only exercise he gets.
Wow.
But, you know, and my mom is older, you know, I mean, but,
God
you
love
know, and my father. You know, all the wine. How many gallons of wine do you think? I mean, I just turned to senior citizen, and I don't want to look back and if they were to stack up the jugs that represent the amount of Guinea red wine I've drank in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
It's a massive pile. You know, I mean, you know, the Italian cigars and the prosciutto di Parma, the cheeses, the rich cheeses.
But you know what?
The starch from the macaroni, the starch from the bread. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Well, you know, it's because of the tomatoes.
But you know
that's
what, too? Yeah, well, you know what, too? Also, our diets were also full of fruit. I mean, come on.
Fruit, yep.
You know, I mean, yep. We'd always have this big thing of fruit and nuts out, you know, for celebrations, too, after dinner.
My wife, God love, made a gun. Anyway.
Yeah, well, so
but
my husband.
She's always amazed. You know, we go to Trader Joe, we go to Whole Foods, we go even to Hannaford Brothers, doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
And every time we go, the first, of course, it's right there by the door, and I've got my little scooter I go around the store in, and it's got a basket on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I go over, first thing, I hit the produce department.
Mm-hmm.
And I buy my peppers, I buy oranges, I buy apples, I buy bananas, I buy nuts, I buy figs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, figs, that's my weakness.
Figs, dates, I buy all this stuff, and she's like, hey, what are you doing? I said, why? I said, have you thrown any of it away? She says, no, you always eat it. I said, of course I always eat it, it's what I eat.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get over to the meat department, then we get over to the dairy department, then we get over to this, that, and the other department. But I load up my little cart, my little scooter, you know, I load up the basket with all the produce.
Yeah, but look,
except in the summertime when we grow our own.
But look at this, though. Look at the direction we're going in. We're talking about things that makes our culture rich. That's part of our culture, how we were raised. And you can also say the same thing about people that are French, all right? And you know, the type of food that they eat.
And there's people of Spain.
Exactly.
And the people of Greece.
All right, but take a look at this, though. The fact that these people are trying to wipe this stuff out is also indicative of the fact they're trying to wipe out the cultures.
Of course, that's the big enemy.
The cultures.
That's the big enemy. Individual cultures on any level.
That's right.
Whether it's because you're Italian, whether it's because you have a Catalan heritage, whether it's because you have a Hellenic heritage, it's a heritage, and that you should only be attached to your state.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
No heritage dietary, you know. When we get through all this, and they ban Big Macs, and they ban French fries, and they ban, are they going to turn around and tell the Jews you can't eat kosher food because you have to eat what the state issues you, and it's not kosher?
There you go. I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
Oh, I would, because you know, don't forget, kosher and halal are about the same thing, and of course,
they will now outlaw halal. Well, they'll find a way to outlaw kosher. I really think they will. I'm not kidding. Because it's part of those two religions that they just are the no-nos now.
Our cultural heritage is indeed rich.
Mm-hmm. It is.
No two ways about it. Let's go back with the fact that I identify myself, even though I have an Italian heritage. Let's go back to the fact that I identify myself as 110% American.
Exactly, yes.
We have, as a nation, a rich cultural heritage as well.
Yep.
That cultural heritage is no less under attack than the fact that my culture is Italian, my wife's culture is Irish, someone else's culture is Eastern European, someone else's Oriental, Asian, etc. These things are under attack, but so is our national American heritage.
Yep.
Our American, people say, oh, you can't have a culture, you're only 200 years old, what kind of culture? Be here on the 4th of July and tell me what you think if we don't have a culture.
Oh, God, yeah.
Walk down the streets of New York City, the capital of the world, and tell me we don't have a culture. Our culture is the fact that everybody else has a culture.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the 4th of July celebrates that.
Yep. And you know what? When you were a kid, you sit out there with your on the curb watching the parade go by with a little flag in your hand or something like that. Or
when I was a Cub Scout, I marched in it.
Yeah, exactly. I was a Girl Scout. I did it too.
Yep, and we marched in it. And later on, I was on a civic organization, and we marched in it. And you know what? When we went past the reviewing stand, we puffed our chests out. We're Americans. When I marched with the Veterans Organization, we puffed our chests out. We went and fought for you.
And guess who never did any of those? Obama.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, no. He did something civic. He was a community organizer.
Yeah, I know. In which he got people together to, advance communist and socialist ideas. Oh, and by the way, critical race theory. Yeah.
Yes, by dispersing George Soros' money.
Yep, and, saying that we were horrible and disgusting and that
people... Associating with communists and...
Yeah, murderers. Yeah, you know.
Murderers, terrorists.
Yeah, that's so American, you know? And then he has...
But he also refused to put the wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown. He didn't refuse. He just happened to be out of town.
Yeah, out of town, and Joe Biden had to do it.
What the heck? You gotta be kidding me.
Yeah, do people understand at all this man hates America? And a lot of people didn't get it. But when he ran last time, I mean, you know, they even said, and no people got it. Nobody got it. Michelle said, you're going to have to do away with your traditions. And it's like, and I heard that. I said, oh, these people are bad news. And nobody.
When she said, oh, I've never been proud.
I've never been prouder of my country. Excuse me, I've always been proud of my country, lady.
And you know, it goes back. I had somebody point out to me, I was a very young soldier, and I was in a conversation with somebody, and it was a go figure, a political conversation.
Oh, yeah. She's surprised.
And I think I was, you know, 17 and a half or something, and I'm having this political conversation as a very young soldier. And I said, my country, right or wrong?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
This one old sergeant, Drill Sergeant Marable, came out from behind the porch on the barracks we were sitting on, and said, boy, finish that quote. And, of course, now we're standing there, you know, because you have to jump up when the drill sergeant comes around.
Right.
And I said, drill sergeant, I said, what do you mean? He says, you got to finish that quote, boy. And I said, okay, well, I'm sorry, drill sergeant, I don't know it. He says, my country, right or wrong, when it's wrong, I'll fight to correct it. And when it's right, I'll fight and die for it. That's the full extent of the quote. And I never forgot Drill Sergeant Marable for just that reason.
Wow.
My country, right or wrong, is not enough. Mm-hmm. It's when it's wrong, I'll fight to change it. And when it's right, I'll fight and die for it. That's how it, or I'll fight and die to change it, and I'll fight and die to preserve it. Because I don't know about you. My final requests include cremation. But I do want a memorial somewhere, and I want it to say the same things it says on Daniel Webster's. Brother, how stands the Union?
Yes.
And I want to hear, she stands as she stood, rock bottomed and copper sheathed.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, we have acid in the water right now.
Yep.
And I can't help but look at things like, oh, how we started this out, Amory, with the UN.
Oh, yes.
The World Bank, the IMF, and now the BRIC nations.
Yep, BRIC. In case the people out there don't know, it means Brazil, Russia, India, and China. They're trying to form their own little economic... trade organization and...
whatever. Almost a NATO, and believe me, I don't doubt for a second it'll turn into a NATO-esque being the minute it happens. There'll be arms. There's already arms trading and sharing going on.
Yep.
But now they want a whole new monetary system built around them.
Yep. They want to do away with the dollar. And as far as trading is concerned, that's one of the things.
You know, okay. Be honest with you, I wouldn't mind it. And I'll tell you why. Because, you know, I'm a proponent of the gold standard. You know, when all these nations say, well, you know, we want to have the euro, and we want to have the BRIC, or whatever they're going to call it, and ruble, rupee. And we're going to have this new yen that's been bandied around for the last 20 years. We're going to have the new yen, and it'll represent the Orient as a... As a block. Okay. Oh, well, you know all that gold of ours you've got in Fort Knox and under New York City? Yeah. Well, we need that. Oh, sorry. We've got it.
Yeah.
We're going to rebuild our economy in your face with your own gold.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, we'll come and take it. Have at.
Yeah.
Have at. Bring it, babe.
Yeah, bring it on. You see, that's the thing, though. The last meeting that they had in New Delhi, I believe it was.
We can't call it Calcutta anymore.
What the heck is it? Is it New Delhi? I can't remember where they had that meeting. They just had one last week. But anyway, they were talking about that the BRICS group had gotten together.
I got it. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Okay, I'm sorry. But they said that the BRICS groups was not bound by the unilateral, quote unquote, sanctions on Iran. And
of course not. Iran's got trillions of gallons of oil.
Yeah,
that they want to trade for arms and products.
That's true. Yeah.
So why should they be bound by it? Look, we're a BRIC. Take BRIC. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's take Brazil and India out of this for just a moment.
Yep.
Who are we left with?
Yeah, Russia and China. Yeah. Yeah. There you go, baby. I really think that India, no, don't forget, India, and I do know in the 70s and 80s and to an extent the 90s, India was a big ally of Russia, Soviet Union. Okay, I owe you Soviet Union. They did a lot of arms trading with them and everything. Russia, Soviet Union. You know, they had India in their back pocket. They really did.
And China.
And China. Well, China. No, China always fought with Soviet Union. They hated each other. At the border, they always used to.
They were still skirmish.
They used to drop trow and moon them.
Well, that's a skirmish, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, okay.
Thing with Nork. I mean, you know.
but yeah, no, you have Russia and China now, and they've become really buddy buddy. And that's
people say to me, well, you know, how bad shape are we going to be in if China calls our debt?
Well, what do you think China's going to... China calls our debt, and we can't pay back. They're going to collapse. Their economy's going to collapse.
Well, exactly. Not only is their economy going to collapse, first of all, but second of all, what if we call our debt to them?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, people say, oh, well, you know, so many $1 trillion, yeah, and how much do they owe us?
Yeah.
How much can they do without us?
That's true, because we buy a heck of a lot of their goods. You know,
I caught a special on Walmart the other night, and... the one thing they did not bring out, it was called the New Age of Walmart or something like that. And mm-hmm. It was all about how they go and find new places to put stores and all this. And their new global trade thing. They've got stores in China. They've got stores in India. They've got stores in Rio and, you know, Chile and places mm-hmm. like that. And they were showing how they have these monitors that go to different facilities that produce, because we heard about the whole thing with Apple phones and things like that, with people jumping off the roof of a building in China.
Right.
And they go and monitor the conditions in all of these facilities. But they didn't say, because they showed the old days of Sam Walton mm-hmm. Walking around shaking people's hands in different Walmart stores, and he was a man of the people, this and the other. And he had his hat on, and he had American flag pins on it. And remember when Walmart trucks all had American flags on?
Yeah, I remember when Walmart
buy USA.
Yeah.
That man wasn't cold yet. And they had those trucks in garages having the flags peeled off of them. If we stop dealing with China, if Walmart alone... stop dealing with China, their economy would tumble. Forget it. If Walmart just said, you know what, we're going to source all of this stuff, price regardless, mm-hmm. to American labor, mm-hmm. China would be a footnote in economics history.
That's true. I agree with you on that. I do. I agree with you, because Walmart, yeah, they carry a lot of goods from China.
Mm-hmm.
They do. Oh, speaking of Walmart, though, did you hear that they're in the crosshairs of the Democratic Party, them and along with Coca-Cola, because those two companies back voter ID laws.
They not only back voter ID laws,
mm-hmm.
but they're both, I don't know about Coca-Cola.
Coke. It's Coke, too, yeah.
No, but I'm saying on a separate issue is they are
they're boycotting them.
They're in favor of voter identification laws and mm-hmm. explicitly anti-union.
Ah, well, yeah, Walmart, I knew that. I didn't know about Coke.
I don't know about Coke. That's what I'm saying. I'm leaving Coke out of this. But
okay, yeah.
I know that Walmart is decidedly anti-labor negotiators.
Yeah.
And anti-union in mm-hmm, particular.
Mm-hmm.
And anti-collective bargaining and stuff. And they showed how many steps are being taken to improve the lot of Walmart employees. And the fact that they're not paid any worse than anybody who works at Kmart.
That's
Sears,
right, yeah.
Target, you know, any of these places, and they have the same benefits as anybody, you know, so why do we need a union that's going to force our costs to go up? And so, but then again, that's the whole union issue. But the unions are all on George Soros' payroll, too.
Oh, God. Yeah.
You know, so they want to do away with individuality, and a union is a perfect, perfect microcosm of the socialist agenda right there.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Oh, gosh, yeah, yeah.
You know, so Walmart, if they pulled out, since they're non-union already anyway, mm-hmm. and they pulled all of their China production out and sent it to right-to-work states in the United States,
mm-hmm.
they could keep their prices reasonably low, and China would fail.
Yeah. I'd like to see that. I hate to say this. It's just, I don't know. I've had it with China.
Fell,
China's doing a little bit. Yeah. I'm just trying to... I'm just getting a little bit sick and tired of this. I really am. I'm getting sick and tired of us being the bad guy, being labeled as a bad guy.
Not only are we being labeled the bad guy, but our president is out apologizing for us being the bad guy.
Yeah, I know. Still. Speaking of the presidential race, though, I don't know. What's going on the GOP side?
It seems that Mitt Romney has picked up a bunch of superdelegates.
Oh, has he?
Yes, indeed.
Ooh.
Page refresh. Yes, he picked up a bunch of superdelegates. And that's a bit of a issue, because it's one thing as well, I've got more delegates than you do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on a day by day basis, well, I've got 14, I've got 10, I've got 114, I've got 110, you know, things like that. But when you start getting into superdelegates that can vote en bloc, mm-hmm. That's a push.
Yeah.
And fortunately for America, I think it's over. Newt is getting ready, and Newt is gearing down to a post. There was a blurb that Newt is gearing down to a post primary.
Strategy. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think Newt has seen the writing on the wall, and I think for Santorum, his little girl Bella again. She's in the hospital again. I hope she, does well.
She's doing well.
Yeah.
But I think he sees the writing as well, because, you know, look, you may be pulling for the guy. I don't know about anybody else. You know, you may be pulling for the guy, and you're pulling for his little girl. Absolutely mm-hmm. positive. But if he's not out there, he can't get the vote. You can have all the campaign workers you want.
Yep,
but if
exactly.
If you're not out there, you're not going to get the nod.
That's
and
right.
if he's I cannot fault him one iota for concentrating on his family,
mm-hmm.
but it's going to cost him delegates. And unfortunately, I think at this point, and I've said this for 2 months now, Romney is the presumptive nominee.
Yeah. But you know what? I was listening to a talk show the other day, and somebody called in who is a Santorum person and said, you know something, I forget what state he was in, I'm watching all the commercials on the television that Romney is running against Santorum and Gingrich, and you know, it's going to be really difficult for me to go in there and go rah rah Romney and pull that lever for him, because he has made such horrible attacks on these two. He said, and you know, we're all supposed to come together after the convention. He said, you know, I'm sorry, the way he has shoved it in their faces and the attacks he has made, it's going to be really difficult. You know, why isn't he saving that and using that to attack Obama? Why is he doing that? You know, he's...
Money in his war chest, if nothing else.
But, you know, it is true, though. I mean, a lot of people are going to find it hard, and they're going to have to grit their teeth because, you know, a lot of people have said, I don't like the way Romney ran his campaign against,
well,
you know...
I'm going to have a hard time voting for the guy only because he's a Democrat.
I don't want Obama in. I'm not exactly too pleased with Romney. And I was not pleased with what his one of his workers said after about the Etch-a-Sketch thing. I mean, come on. Yeah, I was just like, what?
That was absolutely positively a complete gaffe.
It's like Etch-a-Sketch.
Not even a faux pas. That was a gaffe on that worker's part. And then, but, you know, I think the big issue is I wish that instead of having spent that many dollars against Gingrich, because I'm sorry, Newt, this is his last hurrah. He spent a lot of money. He tried really hard. I don't think he would have made a bad president.
I have to agree
with
you.
You know, I would have preferred him over Romney.
Yeah, me too.
But, you know, we knew that once the first 4 or 5 debates, he got that one bump, and then he got another bump.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, we knew he was pretty much out. And what I wish he would have done if he was going to spend money, instead of grinding his boot heel into Newt Gingrich, if he had started grinding his boot heel into Ron Paul, because there's a lot of people out there that if he is the nominee are going to vote for Ron Paul and the president is going to win re-election.
Oh, God, I hope not, because that's the end of this country, and I sincerely mean that. I'm not just throwing words out. If Obama gets another, and this is another thing. Remember that quote, that little open mic thing with Medvedev?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I.
Yeah, this is my last election. Okay. No, he didn't mean that he was not eligible to run for president again, folks. Basically, what he meant was he won't have to run for anything ever again.
That's right. The single, you know, people say, you know, I remember the whole big ball, you know, ball of wax about the Patriot Act.
Yes.
Under President Bush. And I remember people decrying the Patriot Act. Now, I'm not in favor of losing liberty by any stretch, way, shape, manner, or form. And the Patriot Act did have some provisions that could indeed be interpreted as a reduction of individual liberty. I understand that, so stipulated. But let's just look at it ad augmentum and say, you know, I don't know anyone personally, nor do I know anyone personally who knows anyone personally whose life was affected in any manner, positive or negative,
right,
by the Patriot Act.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's compare the loss of individual liberty.
Mm-hmm.
Of the Patriot Act, which, by the way,
yep,
right after his election, President Obama re-signed.
Yep, he did.
When it came to sunset, he re-signed it to put it back in effect. You remember the Patriot Act that all the liberals were against?
Right.
And he ran saying this Patriot Act is an assault on liberty, but he re-signed it.
Yep, he did.
Okay, so now here, let's take that, put it in one side of the basket.
Mm-hmm.
And in the other side of the basket, let's put the NDAA.
Yep. Oh, God, yeah. Yep.
You want to talk about the single most important legislation that has to do with your right to, I don't know, pick your amendment.
Yeah.
Pick any amendment. Any amendment. Go all the way to the bottom.
Uh-huh.
And find anyone that will not impact in a negative way. And I mean everybody. I don't mean a friend of a friend. I mean all of us.
Exactly. I agree. But you know what? So what we have here is we have basically what you're saying is a Democrat running against... Well, it's a Democrat running against a communist.
A communist. Right. Right.
So what do you think about VP pick? Who do you think maybe would say to people, okay, so what do you think? I don't know. I'm thinking Alan West, and actually he's even saying I'm open to the VP slot.
I'm pulling for Colonel West.
Mm-hmm.
I would have liked to see Colonel West run out of the gate of the Republican side.
Yeah.
I would have voted for him in every primary, every general. You know what? I would have just run right there. I would have said, you know what? Get me my preliminary ballot and I'll mail it in. And that's all I need to know is he's running. He's got my vote.
Yep.
You know, exactly. Alan West is the only thing I can think of that would save Romney's image in the eye of the public of the United States of America.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's got a heck of a lot of things that Romney doesn't have. One, he's got a backbone. I hate to be, you know, blunt, but he does. He has a backbone.
He's got a backbone.
Yeah,
he does.
He sees the threat of, you know, the Islamist extremists. He sees that.
Mm-hmm.
He's already been very vocal about that. Plus, he has, don't forget, he's got a long career in the military, so he understands. He understands what is going on out there in more ways than one.
And he has a command-level experience with the military. He's been in the field.
Yes.
It's not just some desk pilot.
That's right.
You know, and I don't want to cast aspersion at George W., but, you know, a National Guard
general. No, that's true.
You know, we're talking about a man who's had his boots on the ground in harm's way.
Yep.
You know, there's a big difference.
Yep. And he has seen his men die.
Yep.
You know, so he understands.
I think Colonel West would be the ultimate ideal pick.
Yeah.
Now, don't get me wrong. I think Colonel West could also be an Achilles heel for Mitt Romney.
Why?
Because Mitt Romney, look, face it. When we get to November, at this point, it looks like there will be no GOP candidate on the slate. We'll have a Democrat running against Congress.
Okay, okay. So, but yeah.
But now he wants.
You know, I never thought I'd say this, but This is all we have. Oh, my God. Do you believe that?
I know that.
Oh.
I know that. And I know how many times in the past the venerable Sean Hannity has said every election cycle since I've heard him back in the 90s in WABC Radio in New York before he was syndicated, every election cycle comes up and he says this is the most important election of our time. But the thing is, every time he said it, he's right.
That's true.
And this time, if he's saying it this time, because I haven't heard him in some time, they moved our radio station around on a dial. I can't get it from here.
Okay.
But if he's saying it now, it's true, people. This is the most important election of our time. If you reelect President Obama, you are no longer electing a Democrat community organizer with a half a year in the Senate. You're voting for a dictator.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
You are voting for a tyrant.
Yes.
You are voting for everything our Constitution is designed to defend us from.
Yep.
If you vote for Mitt Romney, you get a Democrat. Okay, fine. Well, you know what? It could be worse.
It could be worse.
It could be worse. We could vote for Obama and get a tyrant.
Yep.
At least Mitt Romney will not be a communist dictator.
That's right.
A la Kim Jong, anybody.
Yep.
A la Mao Zedong.
Uh-huh.
A la Stalin.
Uh-huh.
A la, you know, Pol Pot. A la any of these people.
That's right.
You know, and it, but I think to pull voters, Alan West will pull people like me to his ticket.
Yep.
But to a lot of the other people who are Democrat swing voters who don't want to vote for a communist,
mm-hmm.
Alan West could cost him votes.
I don't think so. You know why? And this is going to sound crass, but to these Democrats, what would be the first thing on their mind when they see Alan West? What is the first thing when you look at Alan West? What do you see?
I see a career military.
Yeah, but you see, that's what you and I see. But a Democrat, what would they see? He's black.
Oh, he's okay.
See, okay,
right. And yeah, you lost me there for
most second, Democrats, as we know, they look at every person as a group.
Yeah, you know, they have to codify and classify. And
exactly. Both. So, you know, I really think that they would, you know, look upon him and, you know, and I don't know. It might hurt. We won't know. But all we can do is pray. No matter what God you worship, pray, guys.
Take somebody like Bobby Jindal.
Yeah.
I think being a minority, I think he or Marco Rubio is being bandied about right now.
I think any of them would be good. And you know why? Because they're all conservatives.
Not only are they conservatives, but, you know, I mean, if you're talking about the fact that Colonel West is black, well, Marco Rubio is Hispanic.
Oh,
Bobby Jindal is East Asian, South Asian, rather.
Mm-hmm. You see, what it matters is that they're conservative. I don't, you know what I mean? That's what matters to me.
I'm saying for the people who are looking at this being a swing voter.
Yeah,
so to speak.
Exactly.
May have voted for President Obama the first time, doesn't want to vote for him again, but can't stand to pull a lever for Mitt Romney.
True.
Face it, come on, how many of us in the last election cycle voted for Sarah Palin?
I did.
Did I vote for John McCain? No, I voted for Sarah Palin.
Yep.
So, you know, how many people will vote for a Bobby Jindal or a Marco Rubio?
That's true, yep. Exactly.
You know, that wouldn't necessarily vote for Mitt Romney, but will vote for the minority candidate, conservative or otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Vote for a guy because or a lady because they're a minority. Like mm-hmm. you said, Colonel West is an African American, a black man.
Yep.
You know, so maybe there's a point there to be had. But, I mean, when I look at the fact that Newt is saying he'd take it.
Yep.
If he were to turn around and say, well, Newt, you know, I've been trashing you for the last year.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to.
Come up here on the dais and run with me, you know, bring all your votes with me. Or scarier still, what if he turned to, because he hasn't been decimating Ron Paul, what if he turned to Ron Paul and said, come with me?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No.
Because then we've got a Democrat and a,
Ron Paul? I don't know.
Well, he was a Libertarian. He switched over to Republican.
Republican. Now, who knows what he is?
Who knows what he is? He's, I don't know.
Isolationist? Can we? His foreign policy, I think, is that way. Yeah.
Well, it's, I don't think it's isolationist. I think it's more protectionist.
Okay. All right.
Because Pat Buchanan's an isolationist.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. True. Big difference.
Yeah. I mean, he's a xenophobe for crying out loud. I mean, he's an.
I'm beginning to think so. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
But you know, but then again, I think to some extent he's probably. Pat Buchanan, you know, I used to listen to him and say, well, you know, he's got good ideas and this thing. Mm-hmm. But he started, I think, after his attempt at the presidency that couple of times, I think he was embittered. Mm-hmm. Oh, the same way that Gore was embittered when he wasn't nominated.
Mm-hmm.
The
yeah.
same way Jimmy Carter was upset that he didn't get nominated. You know,
mm-hmm.
what's his name? Oh, help me. Camp David. You know, after Camp David and the Arab... No, Camp David under Jimmy Carter, the Camp David Accords.
Yeah.
When they had... oh, my goodness. What's wrong with me today?
What, Menachem Begin and...
With Begin and Sadat.
Sadat, yeah. Oh, okay.
All right, they were both nominated for Nobel Peace Prize, and Jimmy Carter was
Jimmy
not.
Carter, got, yeah, I know.
You know, that, how embittering is that? You know, I mean... you take somebody
I
like
know.
Al Gore when he was not nominated, you know, after, you know, Clinton's term.
Mm-hmm,
you
mm-hmm.
know, you know, Pat Buchanan was not able to win a place in the either the big chair or the one next to it mm-hmm. Two times in a row.
Yeah.
So he's embittered. So I get that. So now, but
Ron
in
Paul.
Retrospect, Ron Paul the same way, you know. Mm-hmm. It makes you wonder, what are these people? Thank God they were never elected.
Yeah.
You know, because of the way they just grabbed onto something and swung on it like a vine.
Yeah.
And you know, they could have been dragging us along with them.
Yep, I agree.
And I worry about such things. But I'll tell you, I may end up having to, especially depending on who he picks as a vice presidential candidate, I may end up having to pull a lever for Mitt Romney just because... I've always had disdain for the outcome of elections or, you know, happiness in the result of elections. I've, you know, something to say about the outcome of elections every time.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never been as fearful.
Yes.
As I am now.
Yep.
And I am actually fearful mm-hmm. for this nation. President is reelected.
I agree. Okay. Lou, I think we're going to have to let it go on that one.
Oh, all righty. Heritage.org, get
yes.
your copy of the Constitution.
Yes.
Before they have to shred them all, get your copy of the Constitution.
Yeah, they might become contraband, you know?
Yes. Put it in your shirt pocket, you know, because this way here, who knows, maybe it'll be in your shirt pocket and deflect a bullet.
Mm, exactly. Well, Lou, you want to bring us out on this?
I want to bring us out on this by saying, listen, America, you really need to pay attention. You really need. There are boys and girls, men and women out there fighting for our right to exist. Don't waste their blood. I hope everybody, blessings on this Easter day go out to Rick Santorum for the health and safety of his little girl. I hope to have our Easter blessings go out to every man and woman out there wearing the boots and every man and woman waiting for those boots to come home and be on the porch. I want to say that I hope and pray that they're all come home soon and safe. And God bless the United States of America.
Samson, speak. Good boy.